Arnie Fugelvog pled guilty to Lacey Act violations in federal court in Anchorage yesterday. As part of a plea deal reached with federal prosecutors, Fugelvog will be released on his own recognizance, pay no bail. Fugelvog is charged with falsifying fishing records in 2005, and at the time, he was a member of the North Pacific Fishery Management Council. Judge H. Russell Holland presided over the arraignment yesterday, asking Fugelvog if he understood all the aspects of the proceedings. Fugelvog only answered yes, sir, when Judge Holland questioned him regarding the plea arrangement. The agreement involves a 10-month prison sentence plus a fine. If the judge rejects the plea deal, Fugelvog can withdraw his guilty plea. The process would start over, and then he could request a jury trial. Lacey Act violations carry a one-year prison sentence and a $100,000 fine. Federal prosecutor Andrea Ani Stewart told the court that Fugelvog had cooperated fully throughout the process. Stewart says the government is not seeking Fugelvog's detention at this time and has no objections to allowing him to travel to Canada in the near future. She says if the judge accepts the plea agreement at sentencing in November, the fine will total about $150,000.
Defendant Arnie Fugelvog has agreed to pay the fine of $50,000 as well as to make a community service payment of $100,000. The money will be directed to the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation to be directed for the purpose of enhancing fisheries habitat in the coastal areas of the Gulf of Alaska. And the purpose of that community service payment is to directly address the harm that resulted from Mr. Fugelvog's overfishing his IFQ in that statistical area in that geographical location.
Stewart says Fugelvog no longer owns his individual fishing quota or IFQs because he had divested himself of them before the court proceedings got underway. Stewart says NOAA cases of this nature would typically involve some type of sanction or seizure of IFQs.
When they are dealing with violations, that they often have penalties against an individual's IFQ. If the individual no longer has the IFQ, then there's other remedies that are sought.
Both Fugelvog and attorney Jeff Feldman were tight-lipped as they left the courthouse yesterday.
You got anything to say, Arnie, about this deal? Happy with the deal? You want to go through with it? Obviously, you didn't return it. You didn't take it away.
I can't make any comments. I'm sorry.
Judge Holland accepted the plea of guilty as charged and has set a sentencing date for November 18th. The Juneau Chamber of Commerce, First Things First Alaska Foundation, and 12 other Southeast businesses and organizations will join in the state's lawsuit against a federal rule that prevents road construction in certain areas of the Tongass National Forest. The Parnell administration in June appealed a federal district court decision setting aside an 8-year-old policy that exempted the Tongass from the so-called roadless rule. The organizations plan to file as interveners in the case next week in federal district court in Washington, D.C. The conservation policy was implemented in 2001 as President Clinton was leaving office. Then-Governor Tony Knowles sued the federal government. The state argued that the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act of 1980, which preserved 115 million acres, also decreed that no more land could be protected in the state. 2 years later, the Murkowski administration negotiated an out-of-court settlement. Jim Clark was Murkowski's chief of staff.
In 2003, the Murkowski administration settled the roadless case with the Department of Justice, and the way it worked was that the Tongass would be exempt from application of the roadless rule via an interim rule, which was promulgated in 2003. Then there would be a final rule at some point after that.
Clark is now the attorney for the group that will file as interveners in the Parnell lawsuit. He told the Juneau Chamber of Commerce yesterday the rule would prevent development of hydroelectric and other renewable energy projects, as well as mining and timber in Southeast, and even the proposed Lynn Canal Highway out of Juneau. A number of utility companies have joined in the case, including Alaska Electric Light and Power, Alaska Power and Telephone, and Inside Passage Electric Cooperative. If the rule stands in the Tongass, Clark says it will be very difficult to get hydro and renewable energy projects into remote Southeast communities that now pay 60 cents a kilowatt hour for diesel power.
There's no mention in the Tongass portion of the roadless rule about the impact that prohibiting road construction or reconstruction in the inventoried roadless areas would have on hydropower construction, transmission line construction from hydro sites to communities, or the maintenance of either one. All that said is existing authorized uses would be allowed to maintain and operate within the parameters of their current authorization, including any provisions regarding access.
Other companies joining the case, including Alaska Marine Lines, Southeast Stevedoring, Alaska Miners, and Northwest Miners Associations. First Things First Alaska Foundation President Neil McKinnon says organizations that join the lawsuit are trying to right the roadless wrong.
We see this roadless rule as probably the biggest economic impediment to the future of Southeast, and it's got to change or we don't have a future.
Clark expects it will take 12 to 18 months before a decision comes from the federal court. Two more candidates say they will run for Juneau Assembly. Financial investment advisor Bradley Flitch says he's running for the District 1 seat being vacated by Merrill Sanford. Realtor Carlton Smith plans to run for the area-wide seat held until recently by Bob Dahl. Flitch ran for mayor and lost to Bruce Botello. He says he's been eyeing an assembly race since then. Flitch says his main concern is diversifying Juneau. He calls the capital city a one-horse town.
We have one water system. We have one power company with one power line. We have one airline. We have one marine transportation system. We have no road option. We have one basic employer, government. We lose a horse, Juneau hurts bad. You know, just working with the community, trying to find that modest growth. How are we going to do it? Where are we going to put the people? What are they going to do for work? You know, those are the issues that the assembly can address.
Flitch says extending water and sewer throughout the borough, affordable housing and job creation are all major issues. Most of the candidates this year cite similar issues as reasons to run for the assembly. Carlton Smith says he's filing his application this morning. He says his record as a business owner and his long involvement with private, nonprofit, and charitable organizations is good training for the assembly. And he says the assembly has a full plate of issues right now.
For starters, the issue of the mine, since we're part owner in the AJ, and kind of how that's going to translate. The harbor improvements, the water and sewer improvements are right there in front of us, coupled with a sales tax issue. The question of recycling, how we can get going on that. And probably most of all is how we can secure the employment levels that we have right now. We've got to be vigilant and secure the level of employment that we have. And quite frankly, we need to have a new focused effort on creating jobs.
Smith is a former chief executive officer of Kootenai in Sea, Alaska. Flitch is a former Alaska Native Brotherhood Grand Camp president. The municipal filing deadline is August 15th. Others running for assembly are Jesse Keel, Lauren Jones, Randy Wanamaker, and Jenny Del Rosario. So far, only Sally Sadler has filed to run for school board. Juneau's crosstown rivals take to the field tomorrow, the football field, against each other. It's the Juneau Douglas Crimson Bears and the Thunder Mountain Falcons, Thunder Mountain High School Falcons, in the first game of the season. The Falcons are just in their third year. The Bears football program is more than two decades old. Though they play in different conferences, they're starting the season in what Bears head coach Rich Soros says may be the most emotional game.
There's so many storylines you could look at, you know, with kids that are related to each other or, you know, played with each other for years, and now for the first time at the high school level they're going against each other. Coaching staff that used to work together that now is split up and in different schools, and just a lot of different angles to look at. And both coming off pretty successful years last year and pretty high expectations again this year. And so I think that's going to add some drama to it as well.
Most of the Falcons coaching staff were once Crimson Bears, and some families have kids at both high schools. When Juneau's second high school opened 3 years ago, the Falcons ended up in the small Southeast Conference with Sitka and Ketchikan, while Juneau stayed in the Rail Belt Conference with larger schools. Tomorrow night's game is a shakedown, according to TMH head coach Bill Boyer, and he expects Bears to give the Falcons a real fight.
My kids are going to come out and play hard, too, but they've worked together many more years. That program has been in place. It's been a quality program. So I expect the first meeting between the two schools as going to be a battle. It's going to be a good game.
JV's kick off at 5 o'clock at Adair Kennedy Field. The varsity game starts at 8 o'clock.